Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Just back from SMAC 2019. Incredible. You will be hearing more about it with the SMACbacks being restarted once they start publishing the videos. But suffice it to say, the last SMAC lived up to all expectations. So I was going to do a podcast on the COACT trial, which is a randomized controlled trial of immediate versus delayed coronary interventions and catheterization in patients after cardiac arrest with a shockable rhythm. Exactly the patients up until now we'd say must go to the cath lab, STEMI or no signs of STEMI on the EKG. What are the results of this trial? Well, I was going to talk about it, but luckily, MCRIT team member Felipe Turan of Resuscitative TEE Mastery fame preempted me because he is right next to Ben Abella, lead author of the editorial for this article in the New England Journal. So you're going to hear from Felipe interviewing Ben. Before we get there, let's talk a little bit about what Felipe does. He runs the Resus TEE course, or if you're in Europe or Australia, the Resus TOE course. And he has two of them coming up in London and Montreal. And there's a few tickets left. He was kind enough to offer the MCRIT listeners a discount. So if you're interested in learning resuscitative transesophageal echo, regardless how you spell esophagus, then you should, must, have to take this course. I took it. It was amazing. It brought me up to speed for critical care or emergency TEE. This is the next way to play for cardiac arrest or sick patients who you can't get views on anterior chests. So enough about that. Go to the show notes, mcrit.org/243, and you'll find the discount code and links to the London and Montreal courses coming up. There's also courses in the United States as well you could check out, but the discount coupon only currently apply to London and Montreal. With that being said, let's get right to the podcast. I'll have some brief thoughts at the end. Felipe Turan interviewing Ben Abella on the COACT trial.
I am Felipe Turan. I'm an emergency physician and researcher at the Center for Resuscitation Science at University of Pennsylvania. And I'm here today joined by Dr. Ben Abella, my colleague at the Center for Resuscitation Science.
Hi, Felipe. It's great to be here with you to discuss this important trial looking at the role of cardiac catheterization after cardiac arrest.
So, Ben, I wanted to get together because obviously most people might be aware this a very important landmark trial came out this week in New England Journal of Medicine titled Coronary Angiography After Cardiac Arrest Without ST Segment Elevation. The study was published by a Dutch group led by Dr. Jorrit Lemkes and is a very important trial for anyone with interest in, obviously widely in emergency care, but specifically in cardiac arrest and resuscitation field. Dr. Ben Abella, along with Dr. Dave Gajewski, were in charge of an editorial that was published along with this trial, and they commented on, obviously, their interpretation as experts in this field of the implications and some of the nuances behind this important piece of work. Why don't we start with a little bit of background, Ben, right? This study is a multi-center trial that looked at a very important clinical question, and that is, what is the best treatment for patients successfully resuscitated from cardiac arrest and that do not have a STEMI on their EKG? We're specifically talking about patients with shockable rhythms, particularly ventricular fibrillation. We know at this point, I think from the literature, that patients that have a shockable rhythm and that have that are resuscitated with a post-ROSC EKG demonstrating a STEMI should go to the cath lab as a standard of care. But this group addressed the question of what to do with those patients that do not have a STEMI. So as clinicians, this is obviously a very relevant question. We are working, could be, you know, middle of the night, and you have a successfully resuscitated patient, and you don't have a STEMI, yet you might have a history, right, that might point you in the direction of thinking that maybe the trigger or the underlying cause of this cardiac arrest was a coronary event. So what they did in this trial was they enrolled 552 patients with cardiac arrest without signs of STEMI, and they randomized them to undergo either immediate PCI or coronary angiography that was delayed until neurologic recovery, basically after they woke up. All patients underwent PCI if indicated at any point, and the primary endpoint that this investigators looked at was the survival at 90 days, and they had several secondary endpoints, including the main endpoint here of survival at 90 days with a good cerebral performance or mild, moderate disability. And what's relevant here, we obviously going straight to the results at 90 days, 176 of the 273 patients, 64% of the patients in the immediate angiography group, and 178 out of the 265 patients, so that is 67.2%, they found no statistically significant difference in the two groups. So this is obviously very important conclusions, and there's a lot of implications of this trial. And so why don't we start it by addressing, I think, one important kind of general question, and that is, does every resuscitated cardiac arrest patient require to have a cardiac catheterization, say, regardless of the timing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Felipe. And, you know, there have been a number of studies over the years that have shown that the prevalence of significant coronary disease is very high when you have all comers with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And so the question becomes, how high does it have to be before you say everyone should get cathed? And studies have ranged from suggesting that it's as much as 50%, 60%, a very high prevalence of coronary disease. So in my personal opinion, I think the great majority of patients after out-of-hospital cardiac arrest for whom an etiology is not otherwise obvious, for example, you've diagnosed a PE, you've diagnosed drug overdose. If those are not the case, I think a coronary angiogram is a key part of the workup. And that's because the coronary disease is just very common in this population. Now, this study, though, asked a different question, not whether patients should get a cath or not, but when they should get cathed. And I think the bottom line way to break it home to our emergency medicine listeners is it's 2 a.m, a 64-year-old has rolled in cardiac arrest, you resuscitate them, they don't have a STEMI on their EKG, maybe it's an abnormal EKG, but it's not a STEMI. Are you calling the interventional cardiologist at 2:30 in the morning? Is that the battle you need to fight? Well, if you believe the results of this study, for the patients who do not have STEMI, you can wait. They can be admitted, they can go to the ICU, and the decision about cath can be done later. But there are some caveats to that, and I don't want to get ahead of myself if Felipe wants to ask me some questions about those caveats.
Absolutely. And so, well, why don't we get there? I think I can read your mind at this point. We've been together for long enough. Why not just wait, right? What is the downside of performing the cath once the patients are stabilized, right, from their initial insult, from the initial arrest?
It's an important question that you ask. What is the downside? And I think the important thing to keep in mind is that, like in any clinical trial, the fundamental question is, does this apply to the patient in front of me at 3 a.m. in the ED or in the ICU? And so, although the study was well performed, a multicenter trial, rigorously described, good outcome measures, I have no quibbles with the study design or the study performance or the manuscript, but it's important to delve a little bit deeper. Most of the patients that this study enrolled ended up not having intervenable coronary lesions. That is to say, the frequency of unstable coronary lesions or very tight lesions or total occlusions was small. It was well under half of all the patients. So for most of the patients in the study, you didn't need to cath early or late or perhaps not even at all. So the fact that they found that on average or in aggregate, patients could have a late coronary angiogram doesn't speak to other things that we know about in the emergency room that could help risk stratify the patient. So for example, what if the spouse is there with the cardiac arrest patient that you've resuscitated and they say they were having chest pain and shortness of breath for the last 2 hours? Or let's say you knew from their chart that they had a stent a year ago or they had known coronary disease, or they had a CABG 5 years ago. That is to say, the patient in front of you is not all the patients in the study, but rather an individual for whom you have to make a decision. Now, the downside of not performing an early coronary angiogram and potentially catching a tight lesion in that patient, the patient who's high risk, the patient who you know has coronary disease, is that when they're in the ICU and you've missed the 95% LAD lesion, or the unstable end STEMI or acute coronary syndrome, when you cool and then rewarm that patient, we've had the experience, as have a number of other hospitals in the world, have had the experience that these patients can go into shock. They can go into cardiogenic shock during rewarming from targeted temperature management. And the reason for that is when you rewarm patients, it's like a stress test. They become tachycardic. They vasodilate the skin. So you can get watershed ischemia, and these patients can do poorly. So you don't want to go through the whole cooling and rewarming stages of treatment in the ICU when you're not sure if you have a clean bill of coronary health or not. And so for select high-risk patients, I think an early angiogram is important. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be immediate. That is to say, you don't have to wake up the cardiologist and have a drag-out battle at 3 in the morning. But at the very least, they should see the patient first thing in the morning and consider an early, within the first 24 hours, say, coronary angiogram. And that, I think, is a more comfortable space for negotiation with cardiology, and certainly is within evidence, and it avoids this issue of missing the lesion during rewarming. That is why I worry about some of these patients getting cathed too late. And indeed, in their study, a number of patients that were assigned into the delayed group still got urgent coronary angiograms. They were converted over based on a variety of factors, some of which may have been related to cardiogenic shock.
So why don't we take a step back? And I want to say we're both cardiac arrest researchers, and we know that conducting research in general in cardiac arrest resuscitation and specifically trials is damn hard, right? Can agree on that. What would you say were the main strengths of the study?
Yeah, I mean, it is a very well-performed study. It's got a very large sample size. It's in multiple centers. They had a very broad and transparent review group. There were a lot of investigative eyes on the prize here. I think having a 90-day survival as opposed to survival at discharge is a very robust measure. They also looked at neurologic function, which is important. So there are a lot of strengths to this trial. And I do think the way this trial directly impacts our practice is that it answers an important question, and it shows that not all shockable rhythm post-arrest patients need to go to the cath lab right away. And that's actually really good news for emergency care providers who have to advocate for these patients. And we can now feel comfortable that many of these patients can be put into the ICU and they can await the cardiologist to see them the next day to make appropriate decisions.
What would you say are some limitations of the study? I know that you would discuss a little bit off record. You have some concerns in terms of the external validity of the study. This is a specific population. All the centers were within the Netherlands, right? So does the population represent well the population that we are interested, say, in the rest of the world as emergency physicians?
Yeah, that certainly is an important concern. You know, it struck me as interesting that in this study, the rate of unstable lesions and acute thrombosis was quite low, certainly lower than what we would see in shockable rhythm arrest patients in the United States. And it does make me wonder a little bit about optimization of medical management, maybe different in different countries, maybe different in different populations. And so this is a common issue anytime you have to interpret a randomized controlled trial. So I think the danger here is to overinterpret this trial and to say that all patients after VFib arrest, if they don't have a STEMI, they don't need an immediate cath. I think that would be an overreach. I think some patients may still need an urgent or emergent cath. And certainly, I think at the very least, it's important to make sure everyone understands everybody in the study got a coronary angiogram. So early versus late, one could have a discussion and a reasonable debate about that. But it's a totally separate debate about whether they get a cath or not. And I think that if you don't have a cause for a VFib cardiac arrest that rolls into your ER, or for that matter, a PEA arrest, if you don't have a cause, one of the more common causes is coronary disease. So once you've ruled out the simple stuff that's right in front of you, it's important to argue that this patient needs an angiogram at some point.
Great. So let me ask you something related to that. And is that, do we know what happened to those patients that were randomized to the delayed catheterization arm, but end up requiring earlier intervention because they either got sick or something else happened?
Yeah. You know, that's important information, and it's in their supplemental tables that are not in the printed version of the article, but one can find online if you're an aficionado of this sort of thing. Some of them were converted over to a more urgent cath due to recurring symptoms, some due to shock, some due to troponin leak. So there are a variety of reasons why they might have gone to an earlier cath. And the crossover rate wasn't enormous, but I think it was 38 patients, so about 10 to 15% of the population that were designated designated for late cath actually ended up getting an early cath anyway. So there are certain reasons. And for those of you listening who are critical care providers, it's important to know that these patients may declare themselves during their ICU stay. And so we generally recommend for patients after cardiac arrest that you keep an eye on troponin frequently, maybe Q6 or Q8 hours over the first few days, that certainly these patients should have frequent EKG evaluations, be on the monitor and so forth. So one shouldn't just say, well, we didn't cath them, so we're not going to worry about the heart. No, indeed, you may have missed a coronary cause of arrest, and they may declare themselves over the first few days in the ICU setting.
That's great. So were there any other things that you were surprised by in the results of this trial?
Well, I don't know if I'd say surprised. I mean, I think it's important, though, to note something that is not certainly a top-line result, but is worth mentioning, which is that two-thirds of the patients of the entire cohort survived at 90 days, and the vast majority of them with a fairly good neurologic status. Now, that may not be surprising that patients who get ROSC after VFib arrest can do well, but I think it's important underscoring for the purpose of this podcast to say that VFib arrest is a winnable game. We can do well by these patients. In this study of 500 plus cardiac arrest patients, two-thirds of them left the hospital in reasonable neurologic status. So less than one-third had significant or bed-bound state, vegetative state. So we can do better. I think this is an important note of optimism that VFib is a winnable situation. And I think really it would be important for us to keep in mind an aspirational goal that I often like to state when I'm being provocative. I really would like to see a world 5 years from now, 10 years from now, where no one dies of witnessed ventricular fibrillation arrest. Now, that's aspirational. Of course, people may die, but I would like us all to have a common goal in mind, a common vision, which is no one should die of witnessed VFib arrest.
Very ballsy statement. Hopefully many lawmakers are listening. So I know that you have a lot of insight, sort of knowledge in the field. I wonder, are there any other trials assessing this maybe in this side of the ocean?
Yes. So there is one this side of the ocean and another one across the pond. So first we'll start across the pond. Good colleagues of ours in Sweden, excellent resuscitation group there, is taking this on with their DISCO trial. This is another trial of early versus delayed angiography after cardiac arrest. And then in Minnesota, the courageous Dr. Dimitris Yiannopoulos, an amazing guy, an interventional cardiologist, with his colleague, the also amazing Tom Offer, Heidi, an emergency doctor in Wisconsin, are performing the ACCESS trial. And that also is a trial of early versus late cath after cardiac arrest. So hopefully in the next 3 to 4 years, we'll have three major randomized trials of this question, and it will give us lots of data to pore over. And I'm sure there will be secondary analyses and meta-analyses. So the story will evolve. And I think we're going to learn a lot more about what to do with patients after we get them back from cardiac arrest. I will say that in general, it is my opinion that the world of emergency care under considers catheterization and under angiographs these patients. That is to say, on average, in most settings, more of these patients should go to angiography than currently do. Now, that's sort of a loose statement. Who should go and when should they go? That we will learn as these other trials evolve and as we dig deeper into secondary analyses of the COACT trial.
Fantastic. We'll definitely follow up on those trials. So let me press you here with one last question. Does this trial and the results of this trial change your practice as individual provider? Let's put aside your role as director of resuscitation science here and your experience as investigator. Think of the hypothetical scenario that you are a physician working in the community and you are working tonight and you're getting a cardiac arrest that you successfully resuscitated and the EKG does not show a STEMI, but you are somewhat concerned that it could be a coronary etiology. It was a shockable rhythm in the field and you're concerned. Is this changing what you're going to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think in many ways this is good news. Certainly, this trial is good news for interventional cardiologists who might want a few more hours of sleep before clinic.
They don't have to wake up.
That's right. And it's also good news for emergency physicians because I think, at least for myself, whenever I had an out-of-hospital arrest patient that didn't show a STEMI in the EKG, I always worried, gosh, do they need to go to the lab now? Do I feel bad not pushing the cardiologist? Sometimes I would push the cardiologist, sometimes successfully, sometimes unsuccessfully. successfully. Now, I think we can in many cases defer that argument with good evidence supporting us. That is to say, we can get the patient to the ICU, not get into the issue of whether they need that emergent cath, and let the ICU sort it out. I can go to bed and sleep better in the morning or at night, knowing that there's strong data to support that many, if not most, post-stress patients don't need to go to the cath right away. So the way this has changed my practice is now I will call the cardiologist for every out-of-hospital arrest to make put it on their radar screen, to make them aware of it, discuss the case. But if they say, well, what do you want me to do? Should I come in now? I can say, well, you know, there was no evidence of chest pain or shortness of breath or ischemic symptoms that day after we talked to family. This patient has never had a documented history of coronary disease. So I think they need an angiogram perhaps, but we don't have to do it tonight.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ben. I think that's a great place to end this. I'm sure we'll continue dissecting and discussing the results of this trial and the ones that are coming next on this topic. And I think that is all we have from the CRS from UPenn. I'm sure we'll continue the discussion with Scott as well, who I'm sure will have, as always, strong feelings and very important insights to interpret this data. All right. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. Great stuff. Is this the final answer? No. Just as they stated in the podcast, there's more trials upcoming. For now, I agree with Ben. This does make me feel a little bit better when I call up my cardiologist, my interventional cardiologist, and I say, I think we'll do this one next day or in the next couple of days. And in the past, I'd be like, no, you're killing these patients. Now I'll be like, all right, I guess so. We will see as more evidence emerges how that changes, but this does make me feel a little bit better because a lot of times, unless there's a STEMI on the ECG, they do not want to come in the middle of the night, and now they kind of are supported, so there you go. Scott Weingart, MCRIT Podcast, thanking Felipe and Ben. Bye-bye.